Hello and welcome to the Disney Magic Hour, episode number 52. On this week's show, I sit down with Disney artist Kevin John. It's only me right now doing an intro, so say hello, Pete. Hello, Pete. And say hello, Pogo. That was No Worries. You can find that video and more over at youtube.com/pogo, his music at soundcloud.com/pogomix, and his website is pogomix.net. We are lastgenpodcast.com. Find us on Twitter for this show at Diz Magic Hour Pod. That is D-I-S Magic Hour Pod. If you head on over to Facebook and search for Disney Magic Hour, you can add yourself to our group. If you go over to iTunes and leave a 5-star review, Melissa will read it at the end of the show. Not this week, though, unfortunately. She's not here. And if you head on over to Google, go into their podcast area for Google Play Music, search for Disney Magic Hour. You can find us there as well. And, of course, the one-stop shop for everything is soundcloud.com/Disney Magic Hour Podcast. You'll find all of our previous episodes for stream, for download. And you can sign up for notifications when new episodes come up over there as well if you follow us. So, where are we at this week? I really had like a massive treat meeting up with Disney artist Kevin John this past, I want to say it was Monday or something like that. We met over at the Carolwood Pacific Room that's in the Villas at the Wilderness Lodge. Which was so perfect because, A, it was nice and quiet. Some little bit of noise in the beginning, but overall it was a very, very quiet room. And you're surrounded by a lot of great photos of Walt and his trains. There's a miniature version of the Lily Bell. But the most impressive thing that they have there is they actually have one of the original cars from the Carolwood Pacific Railroad that used to circle the background of Walt Disney's home in Los Angeles. You've probably seen pictures of, you know, him riding in it and whatnot. Also, you know, like Salvador Dali and, you know, Brogy and all of them. So it's very, very cool being in there. I'm actually going to try to make my way over there more often whenever I can. But I really didn't know what the conversation with Kevin was going to be like. We'd never spoke before, you know, just a couple of messages back and forth, and we noticed that we had a lot in common, our love for Jaws and Disney probably being the two most paramount ones. Also us being, you know, dudes who love Disney. You know, we had an episode on that previously with me, Brian, and Scott. And you know, you guys know how I do interviews. I don't go in there with a list of questions about how did you start at Disney and all that kind of stuff. I try to avoid that. If it comes up naturally in a conversation, that's one thing. But I usually don't dive in there. So we talked a lot about his interest in, you know, horror films and the fall. Like, you know, why fall is like the best season for us. And just a whole bunch of different stuff, you know. So we go from Jaws 3 to talking about Disney to talking about the influences that he had on his career and all the different things that he does, because he is a Disney artist, but man, does he go well beyond that. And we go into a lot of great detail about a piece that he brought with me that he's currently, you know, still working on called Loose Lips Sink Ships. And if you head on over to the webpage, to the, you know, to our show notes page on lastgenpodcast.com, click on the Disney Magic Hour portal and it will be right there, the top entry. I have images of three of the paintings that we discuss, so you can reference them while listening to the show. So I have up there Loose Lips Sink Ships, If You Dare, and the Hat Box Ghost. Bleh, almost got that word out wrong. So you can go over there and check it out so you have a visual to go along with what we're talking about. He describes it very well, but I also thought it would just be good to have that to reference to. So no more babbling out of me. off we go into the land of interviews. It's not an interview. A great conversation I had with Disney artist Kevin John. Enjoy, guys.
And it hung for like 2 hours. And then
okay.
And it was sold. Which is pretty incredible because this was a $6,000 piece. The one before...
The original, right?
Yeah. Oof. The Tower of Terror bellhop. Again,
I really like that one. The Do You Dare, right?
Yeah. Again, that one, I think that hung for 2 days. And again, same price tag. Most of the original art sells between $1,500 and like $3,500. And I'm like, well, I think I'm worth, you know.
Yeah.
This.
And dude, you're at a rate now. You're at a height now.
Yeah, it's crazy.
That's nuts.
Yeah.
Had time to stop and like consider? Or are you so busy, like, you don't even have that?
There are moments where I step outside myself, you know, and say, you know, how did I get here? You know, how did this... I mean, I know how it happened, you know, and I know the journey because I obviously lived it. But it's pretty wonderful. It's... beyond anything that I ever expected, you know, it's pretty incredible. The way that the fans respond to the art, you know, Disney fans are wonderful people. Yeah, absolutely. They're just wonderful people, and they know the product so well. They're so intimately familiar with the Disney story, the legacy. And for them to entrust me with representing these things that we all love so much and respond to it the way that they have is the greatest compliment. I did these signings this weekend, you know?
Yeah, over at the Poly, right?
As part of Tiki Fest. And I mean, these folks post, you know, photos then of me and them on my Facebook and tag me in them, and you know, so that their friends can see, you know, and the one kid, he just said that, you know, he hashtagged like living legend, and I'm like, oh my god, I'm welling up about it right now because I'm a guy that scribbles. But for some reason, people find joy and happiness in the art that I produce, and not only just the Disney art, but the sports art that I've created, and all of the other. I mean, my tiki art and my the tropical art that I'm doing now is really, really popular, and to think that people are giving me real estate in their homes, you know, in which to hang my art.
Your hand hangs in people's houses.
It's
like,
just,
it's nuts.
I don't have children, you know.
Neither do I.
But I've got, you know, hundreds of thousands of pieces of art around the world with my name signed to the bottom of it.
It's insane.
Once I'm gone, those pieces will live on and on and on, and it's just, it's pretty, yeah, it's pretty remarkable.
So. Yeah, well, I mean, I've always seen it this way, and you being a big sports cat, you'll get this. Being a Disney artist that, like, the fans respect is like winning the Super Bowl in your hometown. They're going to love you forever.
Oh, you are so right.
You know, they really are. Like, no matter what happens, no matter how awful the Giants are now, it doesn't matter.
Right.
Manning won two in a row. He's, you know, if Romo was to ever do that in Dallas, like, he could... probably do horrible crimes and they would still love him. Like,
right.
And you are just hitting the stride. And I think that your tiki work also has taken off so well because it's a fashion that Disney fans dig.
Mm-hmm,
you know, just the fact that like you're staying at the Polynesian, mm-hmm. you have the Tiki Fest and stuff. Mm-hmm. It's such a direct correlation. I think that's why that's done so well. You know, so yeah. But you really started, I mean, the majority of your work is sports.
Yeah, almost 25 years was creating original art for pro athletes and their teams. So action portraiture of those athletes. It started as just personal consumption, Okay, so hold on. Movie segue here. Do you hear the music that's playing here?
It's in the back.
It's the melody from Tombstone.
Oh my God!
Yeah, I know. I look at my arm. I've got chills right now. We are in the Carol Wood Pacific Room. Walt Disney's trains are 15 feet away from us. We've got we in the Wilderness Lodge Villas, right? And
got the scale of the Lily Bells.
Right. We're talking about from us. Kevin John creating Disney art, and the background music for one of my favorite films is playing here. I'm gonna lose it, dude. Really? This is ridiculous. Okay.
I'm going to just start in like Hell's Coming With Me and run through the lobby. We can do that right
Hell's
now.
Hell's Coming With Me. Right. No kidding. No kidding. Thanks for always being there, you know?
Actually, God. I want to ask you about this one we're looking at right now. So everyone who's listening, look up Loose Lips Sink Ships by Kevin John. Now, you're kind of proposing the idea that Constance from Mansion?
Yeah.
Was the redheaded the redhead?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't do a lot of inspired art. All of my work, I don't color myself creative at all. I am, if I see it, I can replicate it, you know? This was really a kind of an inspired idea that I had, and I got it down on paper as soon as I possibly could. I don't know. I will probably propose this to Disney probably the beginning of next year, because this year I am booked up now for the rest of my year with the Disney art. And so this piece, if I'll explain it to you.
Yeah, go right ahead.
The next piece that I'll do, literally I will start this a week from today. The sketches have already been approved and everything, so now I just have to go to final paint on the original, is my Pirates of the Caribbean, my first Pirates of the Caribbean piece, and that is the skeleton helmsman who forever is holding the ship against the storm.
Yep.
If you can imagine, here at Walt Disney World, right before you go down the drop. He is there weathering the storm for eternity.
Yep. On your right hand side, just as you're about to get the drop.
Right.
Which really, I mean, that one thing inspired the movies. There's no other hint of that idea throughout the rest of the attraction. But that one thing, like, inspired all those films. That's what you're working on now?
Yeah, so that's the first Pirates piece. I'll go to paint with that, as I said, here in about 7 days. This piece kind of came about because I've been thinking a lot about that skeleton piece and thinking about, okay, what would the next Pirates piece be? Well, everyone absolutely loves the redhead. I did a series of concept sketches for different Pirates pieces, and overwhelmingly people on social media, as they followed me, create these sketches, were raving about the redhead.
Okay.
And for those of you who aren't intimately familiar, the redhead is a wench. in one of the wenches in the wench auction that the pirate captain is auctioning off to the local townspeople and the other pirates. There are a string of, I don't know, half a dozen
girls.
Yeah. And she is absolutely the most buxom and beautiful one of them all. And she's just standing there, you know, being auctioned off. And they have a girl in front of her that's being auctioned. But the pirates keep chanting, "We want the redhead. We want the redhead." They're waiting for her to be brought up. So that's her loose story. I thought about that a little bit, and I'm thinking, what is going through this girl's mind?
And it's a pretty dark scene if you really think it through.
Right?
Like,
however, she's got a smirk on her face.
She does. She's got a smirk on her. Like, she's actually got her hand up to her hair, like priming herself up.
Yeah. Right. So I'm thinking, is this dame? Is she cursed? Or does she have a deeper story? Is she one of those fictional characters from history that show up on the scene, oftentimes in dire situations, but then flips the script on her tormentors and ends up ruling the day and the people that were auctioning her off or whatever the case may be, her antagonists end up really having a bad day at the end of it at her hand. You know, is she able to cast that spell?
So she's like a praying mantis, right? Like she's just waiting. She's just waiting.
Right. So my idea was, you know, is she one of those characters that repeats through history? And this point, she happens to be the redhead that is being auctioned off. However, in my sketch, her hair blows back and she has the smirk, but also reveals half of her face is that skeleton.
Yeah.
And she's looking back, her hands are bound. She's looking back over her shoulder at the harbor behind her. And there is a pirate ship sinking in the harbor with all of the crew drowning. So yes, she's being auctioned off. However, what's it going to cost you?
Yeah.
And she's looking over her shoulder. Taking that and weaving it through the Disney story, the Disney World and Disneyland story.
A connected universe between like attractions.
Right.
Okay.
Does she reappear later in history as the bride that haunts the mansion, Constance?
Yeah.
And who has
killed?
Lopped off the heads of five or six husbands before she meets her own demise. Is she that character that repeats? Just kind of an interesting story that, you know, is it able to write itself or not? That's left to the viewer. But I really love the concept of the sketch. She's got a tattoo on her arm. And the tattoo is, a ship going down in with an anchor dragging it to the sea bottom, and around that tattoo or around that image on the tattoo, it says "Loose lips sink ships," and it's just, I don't know. I I'm not very creative. I don't have these
type
of things.
Stop right now. I'm not going to correct you every time you say that. It's insane.
But I had a lot of fun putting this together.
You know what I particularly like about this is, I love the first Pirates movie, and then I'm not a huge fan of the ones that came afterwards. But one of my favorite moments involves this sort of smirk, but it was from Jack Sparrow.
Mm-hmm.
Like, before Jack Sparrow was just dumb and winning by luck, he was smart and just acting dumb.
Mm-hmm.
He's like the male version of her in a way.
Right.
And when him and Will steal the ship, and Will says, "They're coming," he turns and looks at the camera and just gives that little grin. Because he knows exactly what he's doing.
Right, right.
And that kind of reminds me of it. Now, actually, was there an inspiration for the face? Because, or do you just compose your own facial?
When it comes down to it.
She kind of looks like Penelope Cruz, that's why. She has that kind of look to her.
Everyone has said that, and it's not, that wasn't the model that
I used. That's good, though. It's not a bad thing.
But it's not a bad thing at all. I will give Penelope a call and ask her if she'll model for the final painting. I don't know if my girlfriend's going to like that a lot, but she's sitting over there saying, yes, why not? We'll have her over for a drink. Absolutely.
Well, as long as she brings over Javier Bardem, then everything's fine, right?
Right?
That's the middle ground.
Fun for everyone. I know. After I laid her down on paper, she does have a little bit of that Penelope Cruz look to her, which I probably won't be able to go there with the painting.
Okay.
Because, you know, we can't depict Jack Sparrow, meaning Johnny Depp, as a pirate.
Gotcha.
You know, in art, because we don't own the rights to his image for those purposes. We probably could obtain those, but there's a lot of red tape for that. So
it's a lot of delays
that go
into that. A lot of paperwork and garbage.
Yeah, so we'll go with probably a different model then.
Now let's say you know this is your neck. You know, you got this coming and stuff.
Yeah.
Are you going to start maybe dabbling in that idea of where can other connections be made between the Disneyland mythology that kind of lives within its own boundaries?
You know, do you have an interest in kind of exploring this idea further?
I'll tell you, I kind of leave that up to the fans.
Oh, okay.
And you know, I'll throw out test projects or test pieces, and we'll see how people respond to those concepts, that art, that style, all those different things. And if the fans respond to it, if my fan base responds to it, the Disney fan base responds to it, then I'll run with it, because thinking about that, there's a lot of stories that you could connect the dots with.
Yeah.
And
you could explain why Monsters, Inc. is in Tomorrowland.
Right.
You'll get a ribbon.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Right. I'm intrigued by it. The people who have seen this sketch already have absolutely gone nuts over it. They love the idea. They love the concept. And as it sits right now, it could be a Disney piece, or it could not be. Right now, she's a redheaded pirate girl thing, you know, on a wharf with a boat sinking behind her. So if Disney does not like this direction, I still think that this will go to paint, and I'll market it as a Kevin John piece.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm actually kind of surprised now. What are we, 4 movies in? Now the 5th coming up, and there's 17. Been no mention of probably the most well-known character in that attraction as it was before the the addition of Jack Sparrow, but we've never seen her at all, which is like nuts, actually, now that I think of it. That's really weird.
They do so many little nods to the one character, Jack's kind of disciple, I can't remember. It's not Meadows.
Gibbs.
Yeah. Right. You know, he's sleeping with the pigs and they splash him with water, to wake him up in the morning. Even those little things, they're just, pollinated.
The dog
throughout.
With the keys, the whistling, all that's in there.
Yeah, but fantastic. And I don't know, again, we're living in a different time now than we were in 1950, 1960, when these original concepts were created for the ride. And I don't know if auctioning off, I think the public responds to it really well. However, I'm wondering if the company is fearful of that image. If they had to redo that ride today, that image probably wouldn't be part of the story.
No, I wouldn't think so.
In my estimation. So I'm wondering if that's why they didn't put it in.
But putting your spin on it, I think, makes it then... It makes it cool to see that, because you can almost see her scheming, in the attraction. Like, she's just thinking all the moves through before anyone knows what's going on.
Amen, right?
You know, that would be a lot of fun. And they still have a ride that is dedicated to Song of the South.
Right, right.
It's one of the most popular attractions. So if they were really that worried about that, I mean, how does that ride survive?
Right.
It also goes to prove that, popularity of a movie doesn't exactly have a direct impact on popularity of an attraction.
Exactly.
You can have a film that duds out, but if you make an attraction that connects with people, it doesn't matter.
Right.
Which is, I'm sure, what they're betting heavy on that with Pandora.
Right.
Not a movie that really... Is anyone really talking about Avatar anymore? No, but that land is really great.
Yeah.
And it's something that we want to walk through,
It's going to be spectacular.
I can't wait.
Good friends with one of the Imagineers that is heading up the project, and... Just to hear his excitement about this thing, he's like, Kev, it's like nothing you're ever going to see again. It's really incredible. He's so proud of it and where they're going. And he was just explaining to me, we were having cocktails Friday night, and he was just explaining to me that, they're almost at the halfway point with the creation of this, or the completion of this
land. Okay, yeah, sounds about right. Yeah, for next year.
Keeping the momentum going for his crew is a task, because it's such a long project, and they want to keep up the enthusiasm, but now they're at that halfway point. There's things that are being revealed where he and his crew and everybody working can see the light at the end of the tunnel now. Uh-huh. So I guess there's this reinvigorated excitement about it from the Imagineers and the crew that are working on the thing. And that was kind of cool to hear. An interesting thing about, back to this redheaded conversation. I love the geeky little things. Maybe it's a good thing that the redhead wasn't in the movie, because it's a geeky thing that we as hardcore Disney Park fans and nerds love.
Okay.
If you say the redhead from Pirates of the Caribbean to the general public, they're not going to get it. And quite frankly, say it to any casual Disney fan, they may not get it.
Yeah.
Like Hatbox Ghost 5 years ago.
There you go.
When I created the painting of Hatbox Ghost...
The layering on that is incredible, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
It's really, really something.
It was my first piece for Disney. Mm-hmm. This was Rewind the Clock, almost 4 years. And I knew who Hatbox was. My hardcore Haunted Mansion friends knew who Hatbox Ghost was. But when I said Hatbox Ghost to the general public or to the casual Disney fan, they had no idea what I was talking about. Now he has become more popular than any character from that attraction. I mean, he is the king right now.
Yeah.
And he's not... And for us hardcores that have always known who he is, it's kind of taken him away from us. And,
yeah.
You know? And so I love, you know, Tiki Room, you know, say... I was standing with a couple of friends over the weekend, and we're looking at each other, going lurk, 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 and you know, again, I know that there's about 5 million people listening to this podcast right now, going, what is he talking about? But it's in the pre-show, yeah. And they're talking about how the alligators are lurking through, and that's the sound that they would make as they would lurk. And no, they're not. You know, it's that geeky stuff that we hardcores love. Don't take that away from us and just make it mainstream. You know, let us have our stuff.
But you know, the good thing that can come from that is then. Reinvigoration of some of those old ideas and like finding new ways to use those characters. Like, for instance, Figment has always been a popular character.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We all know that ride has a clock above its head. We all like that's realistic.
Yeah.
But if not, maybe for the popularity of the comic, because the comic like reintroduced mm-hmm. that to kids and stuff who maybe didn't really know who Dreamfinder was and stuff. Now they know this stuff. So if not for that, maybe reintroduction. Who knows, when Journey to the Imagination or whatever it becomes in 5-6 years, maybe we sort of go back a little bit because of the reintroduction to it now.
Boy, is that a good
like
point.
it can go one of two ways,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Like the bottom side of it is, you know, one of my favorite character of all time is Superman.
Uh-huh.
Well, he's not the guy that's in these movies right now.
Right.
You know, like I like portions of those films, but uh-huh. that's not the character. And now that persona has kind of taken over as like that's what Superman's like.
Uh-huh.
So I see what you're saying. Like sometimes we have to be precious about the things we dig, because right. I remember growing up reading comic books alone in my room. Uh-huh. It wasn't cool.
Right.
You know,
right.
And now, you know, I go to Comic-Con and I can't walk.
Right. Right.
Because everyone is there, but still no one's buying comics. It's right. a weird thing, right. like, you know.
I was in third grade when A New Hope, Star Wars, the original yes. film, came out. I was in third grade. Third grade, fourth grade, fifth grade, I took so many beatings from other kids yeah. in school because I loved this weird sci-fi space movie with laser guns. And, you know, the other boys were, you know, playing baseball and stuff, you know, and I'm playing with dolls, you know, and they were now... They're the biggest Star Wars fans around, and all their kids have Star Wars toys and Star Wars yeah. t-shirts and R2-D2 beds and stuff like that. And I'm like, dude.
You weren't waving the
you
flag.
You weren't waving yeah. that flag back then, yeah. brother. Don't fool me, because now, first of all, now I will bench press your house and clean it of all your Star Wars fanboy stuff now and take it home for me.
And, well, actually, yeah. That's an interesting thing you bring up right there. Like, there is a stereotype that is given to Disney fans, especially dude Disney fans.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Me and you don't fall into that thing. Like, no one, not a lot of people walk around with Black Sabbath tattoos on their leg
right.
who come to Disney every weekend now because I moved here just a couple weeks ago. Like, guys who look like you are not usually the cats who are waving the Disney flag.
Right.
But I just feel like there are a ton of us.
Mm-hmm.
We just don't bluster about it very much, so it's like kind of quiet.
Yeah, yeah.
But the idea of like the Disney fan has also evolved so much.
Absolutely.
Because it's a lot of cats like me and you mm-hmm. who, you know, we're not what people would stereotypically think in their head is the guy who wants to go to Fantasyland and check out what's new over there,
right,
you know?
Right.
It's just an interesting, weird way of doing it. You know, like, I remember I saw your art before I saw you. And I saw you, I was like, damn, this son of a bitch is big. Like, you know, he's a big man. Like, that dude is not, you know, he is not sleeping on the mornings. He's working out, like, every day, it looks like.
Yeah.
But I love it that our community has expanded so much.
Yeah.
You know, that now it's not even a second guess anymore. You know, one of my co-hosts, Brian, he's like 6'4".
Mm-hmm.
He's a monster.
Uh-huh.
You know, but he's like the biggest kid when he goes to Disney.
Right, right.
And that's, you know, kind of what connects us all. But anyways, going back to your art, though, I want to talk, you know, there's an underlying tone through a lot of your stuff, and that is your love of horror.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
And, I mean, you're obviously a big Halloween fan.
Yes.
Specifically the movies.
Yes.
Anyone who actually makes a Season of the Witch piece of art... You're miles above most in your love of that. I mean, was that like one of your first loves? Was horror film like one of the first things?
Yeah, and more specifically, anything scary. And I have to I have to draw a hard line between scary and gory.
I'm with you.
No gore or little gore. John Carpenter Halloween gore is fine.
Okay,
you know, which is like a little corn syrup splattered across a window and nothing else. So yesterday's horror maybe, but anything scary. And really that goes back to my dad. My dad and I don't have a lot of things in common, but the things that I do recall most with him growing up, was his love of horror films, the classic Universal monsters and movies, and Halloween. That was our day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we would prepare weeks in advance from the time I was really little. I didn't even know what was going on at the time. You know, we would prepare vignettes for the front yard, and he taught me about makeup, you know, Halloween, you know, horror makeup and spirit gum and all that stuff that, you know, would create your... you know, that scary effect. And that was really our common bond. So I have to give it to him for fostering that in me from the time I don't know, 3-4 years old.
Okay.
Halloween was this magical night. I grew up in Pennsylvania in a little
fall
town.
Fall is actually like fall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Little historical town, Erie, Pennsylvania, right on the lake. And if you were to film the perfect Halloween spooky movie, you could easily film it there in October.
Okay.
Beautiful autumn leaves, bare trees, then craggy branches, old Victorian homes that have been shuttered, stone walkways, the lake that blows these storms over, old graveyards that some, you know, touch back to the 1700s. The Battle of Lake Erie fleet was built right there in Erie, Pennsylvania, in the Inner Harbor area. So, you know, it has this wonderful history of this early frontier town that has grown this beautiful little community. And it is just... it shines.
Yeah.
Everyone thinks summer in Erie is the best, but I really think autumn is it, you know, in up there. So, you know, I lived in this world that was Halloween for...
it's like a film set.
For 90 days. Exactly.
You're living on a natural film set.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So it was... It's just so much a part of me, you know. And then I played football, so, you know, in high school, so, you know, you've got all of that Americana, you know, wrapped into that time period too. You know, you know, you're playing on this grass field and you look out and the lake is in the Lake Erie is in the distance and this beautiful sunset is appearing and the stadium lights come on. You smell the fresh cut grass and the molting the decaying leaves, you know, in the trees in the woods that are right next door and you know, it's getting that chill in the air and you know that, you know, trick-or-treating is right around the corner and everything that comes along with it. So that's where it all started. That then spilled over into consuming anything that I could the other parts of the year to kind of feed that, okay, that desire to have that that spooky ghost story type of thing. That's the other thing, ghost stories, you know, around the campfire and ghost stories that Dad would tell and all that sort of thing. So how do you consume that? How do you feed that need? And it's through scary movies. Yeah, and when I was a kid, it was the old black and white Universal, you know, monster films that were still, you know, the late night show on Saturday evenings and Friday evenings. They were still being shown at that time.
They don't do that anymore.
No. I mean, we had a local guy, you know, local television, where he would come out and he would, he was a DJ for the radio station, but he hosted this local horror film event every Saturday night. His name was Jim Cook. I know that he's a very successful in radio still. I think he's in Baltimore now, like running like half of Marlite or whatever. I mean, he's really successful. But back in the 70s and 80s, he was the host of this horror film program every Saturday or Friday night. I can't even remember, but you know, it's something you looked forward to. That then, of course, evolved into seeing films like John Carpenter's Halloween or Jaws, which is another favorite of yours and mine.
Yeah.
You know, and I love, you know, people. I just ran into somebody over the weekend that, you know, we talked about, they know that I love Jaws. They talked about something and said, yeah, but I can't watch Jaws 3. I'm like, what are you talking about? You can't watch Jaws 3.
Jaws 3 scared the hell out of me as a kid.
It's freaking fantastic.
I remember going to SeaWorld after, like, seeing Jaws 3 and just waiting when you go into that glass tunnel for a shark to break it.
Absolutely.
Does it hold up? No, of course
not.
But it's got that stupidness.
Yes.
That's like, this still is silly enough to watch.
Yes. And it's charming. You know? It's charming in a way. It's not scary.
No,
but it's charming and it's adventurous and it takes you out of your skin for a little while and puts you in a place where, first of all, the 80s were awesome. They were just such a magnificent period. And this film is quintessentially 80s.
Yeah.
And so good.
Yeah.
It was my girlfriend. It was our first date.
Jaws 3. She actually just walked
in. No, she is gone. She literally just walked away now. Well, all right. We were really good friends in eighth grade, and I had
God, all the way since then.
Yeah, I had a mad crush on her, and she did not look at me in that way. However, right after eighth grade that summer, I was able to coax her into a date, and I took her to see Jaws 3. And
when you picked that movie, what were you thinking? You're
like, I'm thinking it's Jaws. I mean, if this date goes bad, at least I will have seen Jaws 3, right? and I look pretty darn good as being viewed through 3D glasses. So there's that.
There you go.
Right. nevertheless, so we you know, don't see each other for 30 years. Then we start dating here a couple of years ago. And then we move down here.
Wait a minute. You didn't see each other for like 30 years in between that?
We lived in the same little town. You know, she got married. I got married. We had lives, blah, blah, blah. You know, I mean, she went to it. Then what happened was she went to a different high school. She went to a high school across the town.
Okay.
And, you know, again, this is before cell phones and this is before. Hell,
so that's that person.
We weren't
on the
allowed
side
to use
Earth.
A phone phone. You know what I mean? I had explained to my parents, you know, why I was making a phone call, right? You know?
Bringing that cord all the way into your bedroom,
right?
And closing the door on it.
Right, you know? And so when she moved, her phone number changed. And she was, you know, literally 15 minutes away.
Doesn't matter.
But it was back then, you're a freshman in high school. It was a different world, and it could have been, she could have moved to Cucamonga, you know? Nevertheless, we reconnect 30 years later, and it's wonderful. And now she digs me, you know, and and why wouldn't she? No, seriously. But when we moved down here,
how long ago was that now?
4 years.
Okay.
When we moved down here, it was like, okay, we totally need to go to SeaWorld. And walk through all the living sets that are, you know, because they filmed that movie here, you know.
Wait, did they really? Dude, I totally didn't even know that.
Dude.
We got to go to SeaWorld and you got to show me.
We need to go together.
Oh, my God.
Buffy and I went there not too long ago and we took our iPhone and we reenacted.
You did like the Jaws 3 tour?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
And we were running quotes and stuff like that. Like when she comes back here, I'm gonna have her do that. She's like, Oberman was found in the park. The baby was caught in the park. You know? Oh, it's that mother gave birth in the park. Oh, it just because you can walk through that park and still see things from the
really?
Movie. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh my God.
Some are painted
over.
Is that
a good thing or a bad thing?
Oh, it's a great thing. Okay. It's a great thing. When you walk in, the background music that is played in the
it's
park
the same?
Is the same melodies and everything that was played in
Jesus
that film.
Christ.
It's fantastic. it's surreal. So that was very cool. So horror films, and maybe more as they were, have always been a favorite thing, and of course that spills out into my art.
Yeah,
my favorite
absolutely
horror film as of late was Trick or Treat, from I think 2007 now or 2008. It seems like it just came out, but I'm not a fan of gore horror at
neither
all.
Am I.
I'm
the
not
torture a fan porn of thing.
Torture
I don't
porn
care.
Or Rob Zombie.
It's all boring.
Ugh.
It's boring.
It's boring, and the what is it called? Like the possession stuff, you know, the quick camera, you know, the jump, the smash cut,
and
yeah.
I've always said, like, I hate horror films that depend on a loud noise because if I was at the sink washing a dish and my wife drops something in behind me, it doesn't make her a good director. It's just she's klutzy.
Amen.
You know,
right?
So like that drives me nuts. I hate that garbage.
I always say that a whisper in the ear is much more chilling than a scream in the face.
Yeah, I mean, one of the most horrifying things ever for me as a kid, it was a silent thing for the most part, was when in The Exorcist, when the mother is coming up the subway steps and you see the face of Pazuzu. Now, I didn't even, as a kid, I don't even know what I'm watching. And I just see this face just smiling at me for a split second. Doesn't say a word.
Uh-huh.
There's no loud, like, meh, like when the face comes up. Nothing. It's just there. I'm not sure if it's there. So now I'm looking closer. And then it comes back. And I'm like, Jesus Christ. You know, like, that's the stuff that gets me.
Right.
You know, your brain can always work smarter than your eyes. If you don't show me what I'm supposed to be afraid of, then I'm going to be more afraid.
That's a very,
you know, like Jaws.
Right.
You know,
right.
I'm sure you know this, but Spielberg made a decision with that movie. There was, when they originally screened the film, there was no, the head of the fisherman that comes through and scares Richard Dreyfuss.
Right,
I think
with the
sea captain's name was.
Ben Gardner.
Yeah.
Right.
That wasn't in there yet.
Uh-huh.
So when Jaws pops out of the water after the chum all this shit line, audiences screamed.
Uh-huh.
And he was like, man, that's a good scream, but I feel like the other one's going to be better. So then he put in the Ben Gardner scene.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then he ran the movie again because he knows once I do this to them once, they're not going to trust me anymore.
Right.
And they're going to see it. They're going to feel it. They'll be a little defensive.
Uh-huh.
But then when he screened it the second time, the Ben Gardner thing got such a scream. And he was like, oh, that's great. But as a result, Jaws popping out of the water didn't get so much of a scream anymore, but more of like, oh, my God, here we go. Like more of like an excitement.
Uh-huh.
So it changed the tonal shift of that horror in that movie.
Right.
Changed just because of one scene.
Mm-hmm.
And because he just wanted to hide the shark. You know,
right.
Which originally that was dumb luck also.
You had to. He had to because the thing just wasn't
working.
Yeah.
So that's how the barrels came up. So, mm-hmm. But, you know, sometimes the greatest mistake leads into one of the greatest films. You know, for me, it's my favorite film of all time.
Absolutely.
But yeah, I like subtle horror. I remember there was this film, The Changeling, with George C. Scott.
Okay.
It was this haunted house film. And there's it's a very sound, quiet film until the end when things go nuts, but it was just about being terrified of this house.
Mm.
And the house worked for you, you know, mm-hmm. and that's how it was.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you know, like you're saying, when Halloween, you know, I know you got scared when you heard that piano.
Right.
You didn't
right.
have to see, you didn't have to see anything.
Right.
Just the fact that you just heard it. Uh-huh. You knew like, oh God, it's coming. You know, it's great.
I love that. Let's talk about Halloween, the movie. Specifically the original. We loved the characters so much. We really loved Jamie Lee's character, where we were really fearful of her. We wanted her to be the survivor. Mm-hmm. We didn't want harm. It then evolved to, in later films, slasher films and whatnot, where fans seemed to, they couldn't wait for people to get whacked.
Yeah.
How was the whack going to come, you know?
Yeah.
Where, you know, through the greater portion of that film, Halloween, you don't, again, much like Jaws, you don't see Michael Myers too much. He doesn't really go on the killing spree until the last 7 or 8 minutes of the film.
Yeah.
It is this, just this story of high school girls, Americana, their friends, everything is happening around them. One of my absolute favorite parts of the whole movie was when Laurie goes, the girls are walking home after school. Laurie finally goes home.
Yep.
And she is going up to her bedroom. And so there we all are again. Our parents are at work or wherever they are in their day. We're in high school. We've just gotten home from school. The house is deadly quiet.
You got like 45 minutes till mom and dad come home.
Right.
So you got your own time.
Right. Yeah. You've got your own time in your room. You're thinking about the night ahead, you know, what if you're going to go out or whatever it is, you're going to get together with your friends. And, you know, she lays down on that bed and it's just so, it's so peaceful. And you feel the impending doom that's coming.
Yeah.
But for that moment, we're all right back there again because we've all been there. Of course, she looks out the window.
The best.
And the again, best. Just Michael is just standing there with those...
The laundry, like, blowing.
And she sees it, and then she steps back, and then she looks again, and he's gone.
Yeah.
So was he there? Is it her imagination? What is going on? She hasn't put all the pieces together yet. But I love that few minute segment of that film. Quiet. It's there's no effects. There's no gore. It's just beautifully written, beautifully acted, beautifully shot. Now, I think that the Scream movies are a wonderful set of movies as well, and there is a part very much like that with Sidney Prescott in the first Scream film.
By far the best one, I think.
Absolutely.
I think.
She comes home from school again, and she has a couple hours before her friend is going to pick her up to watch come over and watch movies.
Okay.
The first kill has obviously happened, so they know about that. She comes home from that school day of the interviews with the police and everything, and she's walking around her house. It's quiet. Again, she goes and gets a glass of milk or whatever, sits down to watch TV, turns on the TV, and it's all about her mother again, because here we are with the murders again in this little town. So she turns off the TV, and she lays down on the couch, and she's waiting for her friend to come and pick her up in a couple hours after cheerleading practice. And she lays down on the couch, and there's, you know, they show the clock, and it's like 7 p.m. And then the clock goes to 7:15 p.m., and she fades away into a little nap. And help me with the director,
Wes Craven.
And then he does this beautiful shot of looking out into the sunset in the, you know, California, Northern California sky, and you've got these just three shots that blink on and off of the sun setting over the mountains and the trees and everything. And then it comes back to the, now we're back in the living room with Sydney. Mm-hmm. She's sleeping. You see the clock, an hour and a half has gone by, and then the phone rings and she starts, you know, she's startled awake, and it's her friend on the phone. Just again, We all were there. We all had those moments after school.
You're connecting with it. And that's the thing. Just, like, we don't get that anymore in a lot of horror films.
Nothing like that.
It's just a bunch of cannon fodder to be like, oh, how cool can we kill us? I feel like it really started with Final Destination. Mm-hmm. When those movies were just about, like, the cleverness of getting the people, which was fun.
Yes.
You know, for those movies, it was fun.
Right.
But then it was like that, and, you know, the Cannibal Holocaust film was like this really dark underneath, and everyone was like, oh, we got to do more of that.
Uh-huh.
And now it's, like you were saying, it has nothing to do with the characters. It's just about, like, how bloody and how gory can we make this. Mm-hmm. But it has an audience.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, power to them, but I hope for that other half to come through. And, I mean, there's a couple of films I would put in that category recently. I mean, I didn't love it, but... what is it? It Comes or something like that. I'll figure out the title later. Mm. Very, very seeped in, like, the 80s horror film. Mm. I didn't like the way it went about halfway through the film. Mm-hmm. It Follows. That was the name
of it. Okay, okay.
But there was another film recently, The Witch, that I really liked.
Yes, very good
film. Really loved.
Yeah.
I actually got to speak with that guy, and it was interesting speaking with him because he says, he's like, sometimes I'm so embarrassed because there's so much of The Shining in that movie.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, dude, you know what? I'd rather it have a lot of The Shining than other stuff. You know what I'm saying?
There is nothing wrong with homage. There's nothing wrong.
Yeah, there's nothing.
Yeah.
Everyone does it.
Right.
Even, you know, you're going to do it unblinkingly.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, like, actually, for you, I mean, are there artists that you grew up on and you were, you know, you were like, I dig this a lot. You know, what was up your wheelhouse?
And I know that, see, I didn't grow up in a real, I want to say artistic family. My family was creative, but in other ways. So I didn't grow up on a steady diet of art, going to art museums and really growing up consuming, fine art. I probably couldn't name, you know, five masters. However, my masters, my influences were, of course, Norman Rockwell.
Okay.
Charles Schulz, the creator of Snoopy. The way that they portrayed emotion through paintings, and Charles Schulz through line-drawn panels, portrayed emotion and evoked emotion in the viewer. I've always loved story with art. And
that's Rockwell.
It's why I love creating art for Disney so much is because I can create so much story, or at least invoke story and leave that up to the viewer of the art. It's kind of like creating a small film in a one shot.
Yes, it is.
And the viewer can finish off the story his or herself and create its own, you know, her own or his own story for the piece of art. So those two, I think, were great influences. Walt Disney films were always present in my life. Of course, we all grew up with a steady diet of the films. I was born in 69, so we had, you know, that time in the 70s where it was a great washover of the films from the 40s, 50s, and 60s.
Yeah.
Then the new films that kind of came about, you know, in the late 70s and 80s.
That was a big age of, like, re-releases, really.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So those were always influences on me artistically. When I didn't even know it at the time, but there's an artist by the name of Merv Corning. Now, he's a world-renowned artist, and he was primarily a sports artist. He did do other brand, you know, other themed art, but he did a lot of work for the NFL. And his style, or my style, of sports art is very much like his.
Okay.
And it took me 20 years to even come close to that style, to being able to replicate or come close to his style. I didn't know it when I was a young kid. I always loved football, you know, and you look at football magazines and promotional posters and those type of things. And Merv Corning's art oftentimes was depicted in these books and things like in magazines and posters and things like that. And you see, I'm doing the Walt Disney thing. I do that, and I didn't even know. I say things, and I use things as that word that you that Walt would use to describe what he's trying to, what he knows, but he can't put words to. So no, I do that too, and I apologize.
No, you're doing great, mate.
But Merv Corning, I didn't know that he was influencing me along the way because I never knew that I was going to be a sports artist. But once I began doing sports art, for 10 years, I pushed towards trying to be comparable to his quality of art. Gotcha. Very realistic. I loved Leroy Neiman, not in the way that his art was, because I appreciate his art. I don't think that he that his style is similar to mine.
No, however, it's very abstract. It's almost like looking at a splash. It's like a Pollock with more direction.
Mm-hmm, right, you know? Right, right. Yeah. However, I loved the marketer that Leroy Neiman was. He was a demon. I mean, he was everywhere in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, from little drawings in Playboy magazine to being included in the Rocky films.
Yeah, literally in the Rocky films.
Literally
film. Yeah.
Painting in the Rocky yeah. films. And so how, as an artist who wanted to go a different route than gallery shows and being the reclusive artist, you know, I wanted to be like Leroy Neiman. I wanted to be everywhere, you know? And so from that standpoint, he was a tremendous influence on me.
And you've done really well with that. I mean, you connect with your fans a way a lot of folks don't.
Yeah.
You know, and that's great. You know, it makes them feel more personally connected to you. And then it helps. And just they then feel not obligated, but they want to share your work.
Mm-hmm.
You know what
mm-hmm.
I mean? Like, because it's more like our friend Kevin did this.
Right, right.
You know, and
right.
that's a big difference than this Disney artist. Our friend is a lot cooler.
Uh-huh.
You know, it also, again, it's more, it's hard to make friendships nowadays, ironically,
right.
with all the social media stuff mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. you're a friend, quote unquote, with everybody.
Right.
But
right.
then for people to actually feel like an actual connection is a whole other thing. I've kept you for a long time, so I don't want to keep you much longer.
I am loving this. This is
let wonderful. Me let me give you. I know Disney fans. They know how I interview, so they absolutely know that Disney is a category and a thing of a thousand because it's just not the way my brain works.
Uh-huh.
I'm not an interviewer. Like that's the thing. Like I can just talk with you.
This is wonderful.
But they're asked. I know they're going to want to know. Like
sure.
If you had to, what's something you haven't done yet that you kind of want to pick at with Disney?
But
can you even say that? I know sometimes, like contractually, it's a little tougher.
Yeah, the wonderful part about my contract is that I really have carte blanche. I am the direction that they've given me is that they love the realism that I bring to. They have so many wonderful, wonderfully, amazingly talented character artists.
Mm-hmm.
That's not why they contracted me. They contracted me because I can capture realism with a little bit of a whimsy stylization to it.
Or even if, like, with the redhead. Like, look, I love Pirates of the Caribbean.
Mm-hmm.
That
mm-hmm.
woman in the ride's not a real person.
Mm-hmm.
That right there in front of me is.
Thank you.
Like,
thank you.
I can see that woman.
Thank you.
Moving and walking.
Thank you.
I can't see that animatronic.
Thank you.
Maybe 50 years in the future when they redo everything mm-hmm. and it's, like, insane animatronics.
Uh-huh.
Maybe. But right now, that's a real woman
thank
walking
you.
Around.
Thank you.
So
so that's their direction for me is to really and I love this because I'm one of the only guys or girls that are doing it. I am taking the environment and the events and the attractions that we love so much in the parks, putting them on canvas and allowing you to take those home, hang them on your wall and relive those experiences that you have in the parks through my artwork in your own home or your office or your den or your trailer or your truck or what, wherever you want to hang my stuff, please hang it, buy it, hang it. But seriously, so I'm very lucky in that regard. That's their only direction for me. So the next thing that I want to tackle, because it's one of my favorites, is Jungle Cruise.
Oh, my wife's going to be so happy to hear that. It's her favorite attraction.
Dude, wait till you see the concept sketches that I have for Jungle Cruise, and I'll be sending those off to Disney for their approvals as soon as I finish the Pirates piece here. And I'm definitely going to revisit the Haunted Mansion because I must visit the Haunted Mansion again through my art. And it's going to be constant, and she's going to partner... be a companion piece to that Hatbox Ghost piece.
Oh, great.
So
okay.
She is going to... those two hanging together on the wall will make a great couple.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Very, very cool. All right, great.
And then Star Wars Land, man. I am locked and freaking loaded. Cannot wait to get my hands on that property.
Every day that passes by, like, you know, you drive by and you can see they're doing the construction now behind Lights Motor Action. Yeah. I think that's a lot of Toy Story, though, over there, but... You just know, like you were saying, you know, with Pandora, it's right around the thing.
Yeah.
When Pandora opens, we're going to know that really our next big thing is Star Wars, and that's nuts.
Yeah.
Like, it's finally happening. That dream that you had as a kid, like, I wish I could walk on the Millennium Falcon.
Right.
You're going to actually be able to walk
on
a model.
I'm going to be in tears.
Oh,
I'm
going to
be in tears. There is no question. I will be crying like a baby.
How great is it being a local? How insanely cool.
Oh, for gosh sakes. It's wonderful. You know, I had to decide, and we just talked about this. We live an hour 15 minutes away. I could not live any closer because it would be too much of a distraction. I'd never gain work time before. I'd be living in a cardboard box, fulfilling my parents' prophecy for their son, the artist. I will be living on the beach in a cardboard box. I live on the beach. I don't live in a cardboard box, thankfully. However, if I was closer to Disney, I would definitely be broke because I would be here all the time, and then they would revoke my passes because I couldn't pay for it, and then I'm on the outside looking in, and that's it. But yeah, being a local is so amazing. I want to say that you become numb to it. I expected you to become numb to the thing, but you don't. You get here and you hear that music and you smell those smells and you're right there again. We're so lucky. I only get to the parks once a month, and I know people at home
That's
are saying,
though.
We only get once every 4 years.
Yeah.
Listen, I was there. I know.
Yep.
I lived in Pennsylvania.
I was in New York.
Right.
37 years.
But... so it's, I don't take it for granted at all.
Neither do I. Yeah. It's been, I mean, we've only been here like a month and a week, I think, but you know, it's crazy that the weekend comes and it's like, what do you want to do? Like, we can just go to Animal Kingdom. Like, what? We can what?
Right.
You know, where normally it was, I really want to go to the movies, but she doesn't really want to. It's really expensive. That'll be our one night out. And now it's just, we can walk around Magic Kingdom.
Yeah.
Which is nuts. Like,
and
it's so nuts.
You discover so much. I've always been a detail geek with the parks. But, man, I mean, Buffy and I will go to Hollywood Studios. And we'll try to retrace all the original portions of the park that are still there.
Okay.
And every now and then you can look in a corner over here, you look down a hallway there, you look down an area over here, look around this area, and there are little things that were the original pieces of that park, and they're slowly being chiseled away. But we will go to that park for an entire 12-hour day, not ride an attraction, maybe Great Movie Ride, but
there's an hour of your day
right there. Which is awesome. And just enjoy being, you know, just being there. It's amazing.
I do really, though, look forward to the eventual refresh of Hollywood Great Movie Ride.
Because
I think that there are so many places they can go. I'm not just talking about IPs either, which, you know, I'm sure you've read it, or if not, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy is going to be taking over Tower in Disneyland. I've never been to Disneyland, which is nuts. I'm going next year for my first time, but mostly people say that's the much inferior version, and a lot of people seem to be very excited about it, and I am too. But you know, there is a lot of IPs coming in.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping for an eventual sort of, you know, like when they built Pirates of the Caribbean, it wasn't an IP. It was something they created from the ground up.
Right.
And I'm hoping for more of that as it comes down to the future, you know?
Yeah, I understand the direction that the company wants to go with taking things like Maelstrom and turning it into Frozen. Financially, I understand why they're doing it. However, the only commentary I'll give on that is this is a company built on nostalgia. And they make us or allow us to fall in love with these things, and then they take them away from us, and I don't like that.
Yeah, but that's us, though. That's us at our age, though. You know, like a kid coming in, if you were a five-year-old kid, and it's almost impossible, like, with the technology that's at their fingertips now, going into something like Maelstrom is almost like carny level, you know?
You know what, though?
Like,
I think that
the oil tanker at the end was a weird finale.
I have to take exception. I have to take exception to it because I don't think there's anything wrong with that. When I was 5 and 6 and 7 and 8 years old, we weren't going to Disney World. We didn't do that. My parents, we would go to Fort Niagara. We would go to places like Williamsburg. We would go to historical locations, Boston, and do the historical tour. So now we're walking in houses that were built 300 years before. They're stone. There's no telephone. There's no TV. There's a wooden plank for, you know, wooden planks for floors, if that, if not dirt. And I'm not saying, well, this isn't up to technology standards of the day. Where's the television? Where's the phone? No, it's history. That is part of our history. It was 70s and 80s and 60s history, but it's still part of our history. And just because it doesn't have a digital screen attached to it doesn't mean it's not good anymore. It's good
Absolutely. Stuff. But would you pay, as a family of four, $4,000 to walk through Boston?
Good point.
That's the thing. Like,
you're right.
And I'm a history lover also. Yeah. Like, I really hope that, obviously, where the Walt Walk-Through Museum. Why am I blanking?
Oh, yeah.
In Hollywood Studios.
Right.
What's wrong with my brain right now?
One man's dream. Yeah. It's all right.
I really don't want that to go away.
Yeah.
But I know it's going to move. At the very least, it's going to move.
Yeah.
But I would love to see that moved, like, on Sunset Boulevard and then put Carousel of Progress behind it.
Yeah.
Make it into one thing.
Yeah.
Like, I want the history to stay also. But I also know, you know, there's that awful reality, you know, that people just weren't going to these attractions anymore.
Right.
You know,
right.
And they got to get people in here. And do I think a Guardians thing is the best? I don't know, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know. Does it fit in the part called California, you know? Right. Probably not.
Right.
But also, that probably wasn't the greatest idea to make for your park as it was, because people who live in California don't really want to visit a park about California.
Right.
You know, it's like, I'm a New Yorker, and I'm not going to go to, like, the littler version of the Empire State Building, you know, like, I've been there. It's cool. Like, I don't need to go to a Disney-fied version of, like, where I'm from. You know, like, I wouldn't mind a cleaner version of Midtown with less people.
Right.
But, you know, that's the hard balance that this place has to make, is that it is. It's a nostalgia for childhood, but then it has to be a nostalgia for four generations of childhood.
Yeah.
It's such an impossible thing to balance.
Yeah.
And as things move along and new things are introduced and all this, you know, look, I'm a Marvel guy. Like, if you would have told me a decade ago, Guardians of the Galaxy is coming to a Disney park, I first would have slapped you.
Right.
And then I would have said, that's just never going to happen. It'd be too cool.
Yeah.
And now it's happening, and my stupid adult brain is like, but does it really fit the theme?
Uh-huh.
Like, just be like, sometimes I just wish I could react like a kid again
and
be like,
right.
I want Rocket Raccoon to get me out of the hive of the collector.
Uh-huh.
Like, that's what I want.
Yeah.
But it's hard. It's really hard to do that.
Yeah.
You know, we're going through that with Hollywood Studios. I feel like since the day it opened, it's been changing.
It's
still searching.
Right.
Now, is Star Wars and Toy Story a step in the right direction? I think so. Make it Disney Studios. And you know what? Just, you want your IPs? Make that the land of IPs.
Uh-huh.
Go right ahead.
Uh-huh.
And then God knows if the contract on Marvel ever frees up.
Yeah.
You know, that two-thirds of empty land that they have right now,
right.
There's going to be a significant portion of it probably knocked over.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, like, if you, like, would you want, are you a Marvel guy? Like, would you want, like, a fifth park of something, of, like, a new thing?
I'm a villain's fifth park guy.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, my God.
You know, that's, I mean, I've got, you know, I know that on the table and off the table, there has been drawn up and scrapped storylines for The Legend of Sleepy Hollow several times within the history of Disney parks. One of the original storylines for Haunted Mansion included The Legend of Sleepy Hollow.
Oh, really?
And okay. It just... I mean, I love that. It's the greatest ghost story that America has, right?
I love it.
And
I love
it's
it so
just
much.
So great. And would I love a Sleepy Hollow ride through something, whatever.
With an up-to-date animatronic of the Headless Horseman, could you
really
imagine?
I know.
People would lose their minds.
Yeah.
What would be your center point, like in that park?
All right. Oh.
Everything's got there, you know, the weenie. What's the weenie in that? I have people who have voted sort of on this before. I have one thing, but I'm curious.
Yeah, without being able to really think about it too much, my first inclination has to be a dark and stormy castle. You know, dark and stormy castle up on a hill.
Maleficence is like the one
absolutely.
That always comes up. Like, how nuts would that be?
Right.
But can you market that to kids? You think that'd be tough?
Well, you know, Disney
they
did
love
a very,
being scared.
Disney did a very, but no, I don't think they do. Not now anymore.
Oh, okay.
We used to, but not anymore.
Not anymore.
You don't want to be
okay.
scared.
All right.
They're so wrapped in plastic bubbles now. They just, you know, they cannot be scared. But Disney did a very interesting thing last year, in they did that High School Musical type of thing with the villains' children.
Descendants.
It was great. Now, it wasn't really my, you know, they weren't targeting a 47-year-old male.
Exactly.
But I dug it. It was cool. It was a great idea. I don't know how the tweens responded to it. You know,
it was popular.
It got popular.
I think they got another one coming up.
Good.
I'm pretty sure.
You know, I think that, but. So I think that it shows that the company still has one foot there, but not like, I mean, think about the original Disneyland park and how, in films.
Watcher in the Woods.
My goodness, think about all the amount of scary stuff that Walt had in that original park. There were a lot of scary elements. It's one of the spices of life, you know?
Yeah.
And it is being scrubbed from childhood now.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, it's gonna reap poor benefits to be, you know, down the road, I think. You know, because I think having children be scared of pretend things is okay, you know? Ghosts and goblins it's okay to be scared of those. You know, no, I don't want a kid to see a slasher film.
No. But like a horror whimsy almost. You know, you can find the middle ground in there somewhere, you know?
Give me It's the Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
exactly.
Give me that. And, you know, that's very interesting. You know, Disney, when I started coming to Disney World, was 1998. I had never been here before then. And
that was my second visit after 1986. So I had a big gap.
Yeah. The Halloween parties back then were awesome. The Mickey's Not So Scary Halloween parties were so much better back then than what they were today, because they were that Disneyfied scary. Scary but not too scary.
Okay.
It was clean, pure Halloween stuff, you know, like the Halloween in our imaginations. And that was really cool. But Disney can do it. They can do scary without pushing it to being too scary. I just think they have to make a commitment to it.
I think step one would also be push that party past Main Street.
Yes.
It sort of exists a little bit over here.
It used to be park-wide.
It's got to be park-wide.
Yeah. It used to be that they would vacate the park.
Uh-huh.
Clean everybody out of the park.
Yeah.
Lock the gates and then let everybody back in at 7. We ordered food inside Cosmic Rays Starlight Cafe right when they were moving everybody out of the park. So we just kind of wandered down, sat with Sunny Eclipse, ate our hamburgers and fries really slow until nobody cared anymore that we were there. And we sat and looked out those windows, because there's windows 360, almost 360 degrees around that Starlight Cafe. And we watched Halloween appear out of everywhere.
Oh, that's so cool.
Lights over here. Tree branches with cobwebs over here. You know, characters walking through in costume getting ready. Because back then, characters actually wandered the streets.
They can't do that anymore.
I understand.
Yeah, you know why.
I totally understand. But
thanks, people.
Right.
Yeah.
But we watched that happen. We walked out then of the Starlight Cafe just before 7 o'clock, and we wandered this park empty. Buffy, I think she just knocked over Walt's train. I told you not to touch the train.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, good luck submitting your next sketch to Disney, Kevin John. Yeah, that's the guy that wrecked Walt's train. Well, actually, his girlfriend did, but we're pinning it on the bald guy. Nevertheless.
So you're watching Halloween, like, be born, yeah, like in the parks.
And then walk through the park. And it was spooky. And they had the spooky, chilling music played. Right now, now they play. It's like a disco show. I think we heard Def Leppard being played. What? During, right? Was it not Def Leppard?
And Rihanna
during the Halloween party this last year.
I don't get it.
Everything has, and there's a dance disco show. Why does everything have to be a dance party?
Me and my wife were talking about this recently. We're like, why is there so many dance parties?
Yeah,
but you see, like, some people like them, but I don't feel like it's such an overwhelming majority.
Right.
Like, I always think, like, if this was an attraction, would it stay open? I don't think
Right, exactly.
I also, I'm one of the people I'm a big proponent of whatever the price is right now. I've gone to the Halloween, the Christmas party a number of times, and it always feels way too filled.
Uh-huh.
I was like, how about, you know what, dude, honestly, at that point, charge me 30% more and let 30% less people in every night.
Right.
Well, because then I'll be able to really enjoy this thing and not just be shoulder to shoulder for a 2-hour wait for a photo op with Jack Skellington, which is nuts.
For until about 2004, those Halloween parties were, I think the $24.95 was the ticket. You got you know, like the photo pass thing that they do now.
Yeah.
Back then, of course, film was not digital, so they would take a professional photo of you. In front of this Halloween backdrop,
okay.
And then they would send it to your house, send you literally a hard copy to your house for every ticket that you bought, you know?
Okay.
So you had this nice portrait sent to your home after you got back from your vacation from the Halloween party. The trick-or-treating was kind of like a minor element of the thing, and there was hardly anybody in the park. It was walk-on rides. It was... They capped off the ticket sales to where it was a very intimate experience in this magical Halloween land, you know, with spooky music playing and ghosts flying around, and it was just
that needs to be implemented more.
Back to our initial prompting of this subject. Yes, I think that Disney can do a fifth park as a villains park, and it can be scary and cool. And I think that Disney, as they did before in the 60s and 50s with their films, I think they can change the culture. They can change the appetite of what kids will like and not be afraid of by introducing them to scary. Doesn't mean bad. Scary is good.
Scary can be fun.
Scary can be
it's
a
fun
heck
to
of
be
a
scared.
Lot of fun. Yeah.
It's really fun.
Yes. Yeah.
So
that's my thought.
All right, mate. We talked about a whole lot. Yeah. We could talk about movies also. We barely even like touched the Jaws thing.
We need to do one on Jaws. One podcast on Jaws.
You know what? We got to talk afterwards because I have another podcast that's all film.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
It's nuts. That's a...
We need to go to SeaWorld.
Absolutely.
And do a podcast
I had no idea that was a thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I definitely want to do that, too. Mate, thank you so much.
It was such an honor.
It was awesome.
Thank you.
Hey, guys. Oh, where can everyone find you?
I want you to. All right. If you go to kevinjohn.com, kevin-john.com, You can, that's my main website. It's being rebuilt right now. You can still access it. But very soon you're going to see a new version of kevinjohn.com. From there, now and in the future, you'll be able to link to my Facebook. And that's really the most important. That's where I live daily. We do daily uploads from my studio of work that I'm creating. We do giveaways of original artwork, sketches. We have sales on art. We have, I love my fans, and we really treat them as best we can. And experiencing that through social media and through Facebook is, there's a button, press the F, friend me and follow me, whatever, and be a part of the fun.
I'll have links to all this in the show notes when I post up the show as well.
Okay? Thank you. My Disney art is exclusive to Disney Parks and the Disney Park shopping apps. It's the only way that you can get it. And you just search Kevin John, Kevin-John, or ask for Kevin John art when you're at the Disney Parks. And they'll point you to it. And if you want to buy something from me and have it personally signed and all that good stuff that's non-Disney, that's any amount of other artwork that I do, go to kevinjohnstudio.com. And that's the store right there. Eventually, like I said, within the next month or so, that'll all marry together. Okay. But right now, Kevin John Studio is a place to buy stuff. I think we got a good sale on right now, too. I mean, you can buy a lithograph, a hand-signed lithograph of all kinds of good stuff for like $19 right now.
Yeah, so, a couple of tiki ones I saw up there recently.
Yeah. Again, my idea is treat the fans, get the art in their hands, and have them enjoy that. And it has been an honor to be here
with
you.
It's been a lot of fun.
Kevin John, everybody. See you. Thanks, man.
There you have it. How cool is this dude? He's so great. The best part of this, this sit down and this talk that me and him have was we left as friends. It's like the coolest thing. He's a friend now. And all of that is because of Disney. How nuts is that? How great is that? That's, of all the things that I want out of this show, I don't know if I really understood how much you could meet new people and make new friends. I don't think I really knew that or understood how that would work when we were starting this thing. And we're still early. This is our 52nd episode. We're getting close to a year, I think. I don't know. I got to look at that, actually. is this our year? I don't know. I don't think so. 52, though, would implicate 52 weeks, but I don't think that's totally accurate. More on that another time, evidently. Just sitting down with him and talking with him and learning more than just the guy who paints for Disney is what I was hoping for and what I absolutely got. He really, told some great stories. I love when he opened up and spoke about his father. To me, that was one of the highlights, the relationship with his father, because that's the real stuff. They can tell me how they got started in art and all that jazz. And usually I'm still fascinated with that question, but I love it when we, go beyond that. So I can't stress more. Go over to his website, kevinjohnstudio.com. And as he said, he has another website. They're going to be merged eventually, but you can find all of his art between both of them. And the second website is kevin-john.com. And as he said, his Facebook page is really the place to make contact with him. He is constantly putting up stuff. He's constantly putting up new sketches, getting people excited, letting everyone know if he's going to be making appearances and stuff. So head on over to Facebook, and you want to search for Kevin-John, and then his last name is Jobzinski, Jobzynski. Now, I have those links in the show notes again over on the webpage over at lastgenpodcast.com. So head on over there, add him as your friend, follow him, tell him how you heard him on the show and you had a good time. Let him feel the love, because he's a good guy and he deserves everything that he's getting right now. It's one of the good guys winning right now. So it's nice to see. So until next week, and I want to say next week we're going to have, returning to the Disney Movie Hour, we're going to be talking about The Swiss Family Robinson, which I'm interested in because I don't remember that movie at all. And of course, we'll be joined by Ryan Wilson and Brian and Melissa will be here. So the whole crew will be back. And until then, right now, you are listening to No Worries. You can find this video and more over at youtube.com/pogo, his music at soundcloud.com/pogomix. His website is pogomix.net. Not a Disney track. This is actually the lead track. Nope, it's not the lead track. It's maybe the second or third track off of Pogo's Kindred Shadow album, which I absolutely love. And you can stream the whole album from YouTube on his page. So go and check it out. I absolutely love it. We are, though, we are Last Gen Podcast. You can find us at lastgenpodcast.com. Go over there and check out the Mouse Telegram. We started back up the blog. Huzzah! Mel will be doing a weekly entry into that, like just giving you a wrap-up of all the news that's happened in the parks. And I'll blabber something on there every now and then. I recently put up, actually, I kind of like it. I recently put up an article discussing the future, or maybe non-future now that we have had a Guardians of the Galaxy announcement, which we'll discuss next week on the show with everyone else. You know, the idea of Guardians of the Galaxy and Epcot, but more of like, what is the future of Epcot is sort of what that article is getting at. I just use Guardians of the Galaxy as my waypoint. So you can also follow us on Twitter at DIS Magic Hour Pod. That's Diz Magic Hour Pod. On Facebook, search for us on Disney Magic Hour. Add yourself to the group. Add your friends to the group, guys. That's a huge way to help us stretch out the show. Especially also sharing this show on your Facebook page is immensely helpful. So if you could do that, I would thank you so much for that. Head on over to iTunes. Give a 5-star review. Mel will be reading them next week at the end of the show live. Live? We're not live yet. We might go live one day. I didn't say that out loud. Hush. Google Play Music. You can head over there, go into the podcast section, and look for Disney Magic Hour as well. And of course, the one place to find everything, soundcloud.com/Disney Magic Hour Podcast. You can stream, download across all your devices, add the app to your phone, favorite us, download every episode. Even if you already heard it, just hit play. Don't worry about it. All right, guys, have a good week. Be safe out there. Next week, Swiss Family Robinson, Abracadabar, discussing Guardians of the Galaxy, going over in Disneyland. Lots of stuff. Have fun, guys. Be safe. See you later. Good night, Pogo. Say good night, Pogo. I'm alone. I screwed it up. Have a nice weekend, guys. Bye.